Okay, I've got our line set to record. We have a lot to get through today, everybody. So we're about a minute early here. So I'm going to finish up some logistics on my end over here. But real quickly, while we're unmuted and everyone's just sort of getting dialed in, who do we have on the call so far? Everyone's unmuted, so just kind of, you know, chip in with who you are and where you are, and we'll get started here in just a moment. Who do we have so far, guys?
Hey, this is Carl Perry, Gensonitas Coretti, San Diego.
Oh, hey, good. I'm glad you made it, man. Good. Gensonitas. I love it out there. Who else do we have so far, guys?
Pete Johnson, California.
Hey, Pete, there. I'm a bunch of California constituents. Who else was there behind Pete?
Yeah, Orlando,
Tampa,
Florida.
Ah, Orlando made it. Good. Orlando, we got a lot to do, man. Orlando, I'm sure a lot of you guys know Orlando. Orlando's a very accomplished, competitor, kickboxer. Orlando, how would you, maybe give everybody just a real quick, one minute outline on your, what have you been up to in your spare time?
In my spare time, future athletes and future moms and kids that want to just learn the true form of kickboxing in the manner that I was taught, which, you know, achieved me 5 world titles. And, you know, you, like anyone would know, if you followed me, there was, a lot of fights that I had that, you know, were always against stronger opponents, and I was always the underdog.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
Now I'm trying to train these kids, you know, how to be more sports athletic rather than, you know, just the fighting art more than anything.
Yeah, absolutely. So any of you who don't know Orlando, actually, if you go to the NATMA members website, if you go to the NATMA Classroom Mastery Institute, that's sort of our video library, for lack of a better description. It's our big video database. If you go back in there, you'll see some videos that Orlando did many years ago for some really sort of high-intensity plyometric training drills and some things like that are really, really great for adults. And many, many, many of them, in fact, almost all of them, are really, really appropriate for kids, too, especially when you're training them at a relatively high level, sort of as Orlando is describing. We're getting a little bit of background noise. I'm going to switch this to Q&A mode, guys. Everybody hang on just 1 second. Okay. Yeah, so we still have enough people on the line that the background noise kind of becomes untenable. Usually over about, 35 or 40 people, it starts to get unmanageable. But we heard from many of our California constituents, and some East Coasters, and then Orlando is here as well. We've got a few people calling in from Georgia and really all over the world. I see we have a couple of New Zealand numbers on the line. I also see our Swedish contingency. That's very cool. From Sweden, Matt and his wife are on the line as well. So welcome, everybody, to our Maximum Impact call for the month. We have a lot to accomplish today, and as always, not much time to do that. I wanted to contribute a couple of things before I asked for and answered any questions. I have a couple of upcoming events I wanted to mention to you really quickly before we get into the meat of our topic today. But our topic for today is the next stage in our summer success cycle, the things that we're all doing sort of in the summertime to for lack of a better description, shake off, the summertime slowdown. An awful lot of schools really still, do have an awful lot of trouble in the summer months. They have, students that are on vacation, people that are going here and there. There's less engagement classes. There are a lot of things happening in the marketplace. And there's a lot of clutter out there competing for our prospective students' attention. And most of our industry looks at that as just a given, as sort of an immutable, scalable obstacle. But everybody who's on the call today, you shouldn't be thinking that way. There are tremendous, tremendous opportunities in the summertime that most of our industry just ignores. They're too fearful, they're too... it's a sad reality, but most of our industry is very, very sort of narrow thinking. They just don't look beyond their own comfort level or outside of their sort of fort wall, so to speak, to look for opportunities. So we're not them, right? And we certainly are. We're always looking for the next opportunity, right? Where can we expand our business? Where can we grow to? Where can we move to? What obstacles can we overcome? So it's definitely a different culture that you're now surrounded with. So you know, utilize that. Just a couple of quick logistical items before we get into our topic today. Number one is, as I'm sure you've noticed through our email threads and on our calls, we do have our Inner Circle and Peak Performer live mastermind meetings are coming up in about 2 weeks in Washington, D.C. Inner Circle members are on May 17th and 18th, and Peak Performer members are on the 18th and 19th. And on the 17th, the first day, on Friday the 17th, we're also having, I don't want to say it's kind of open, but we're having kind of a summer success seminar on that Friday in the afternoon as well, that obviously all MATMA members, you're welcome to register and attend as well. And we have a special member appreciation bonus evening if you are a MATMA member and you decide you want to come to that Extreme Success Academy event in D.C. You'll spend the afternoon with sort of the general group, the folks who are there for the sort of summer strategies. And then that evening, we're going to take all of our members aside separately and have a special session with you all, probably over a, you know, dinner or something. But, you know, just a sort of kind of a way of reaching out to all of our members who make it out to D.C. and say, hey, listen, you know, let's look at your specific business and look at it specific. We're thinking of an awful lot of background there. You know, let's look at your specific business and see what, you know, specific issues you're dealing with and how we can address that. I think there's something that everybody has to be particularly focused on right now. Somebody asked me, I had a question from a member, I actually have two member questions I want to address quickly here. In Meshava, the second one, I think we need some feedback from you would be very useful. The first question is this, and I want just everybody to think about this in general terms. Somebody was pinging me on, I think, Facebook, and asked me, had just seen a couple of videos that somebody put up on the interweb somewhere about, you know, that nobody should be using contracts anymore, and, you know, it's somehow unethical or immoral to use a written student membership agreement or some BS like that, right? And his question to me was, what's, you know, the worst advice I've heard lately, you know, that people should really be on kind of the lookout for? And my answer to him was very different than I think what he was expecting. And I'd like everybody to just think about this for a minute. I think almost any advice can be either really, really bad advice or really good advice. It just depends on what you're trying to accomplish. I think everybody's in a different position. Now, I think there are some fundamentally really bad strategies out there. For example, not using any kind of a written membership agreement, I think, is a bad strategy. I think strategically, almost all of us should be using some type of a written membership agreement, a contractual agreement. Now, again, the way our philosophy about that, our strategy about that, typically is, you know, I've never in my, you know, 14 or 15 years, and that's all that I know we've had this conversation before, you in 30 or 35 years, we've never, like, sued a student over breaking a contract or sent them off to collections or anything like that.
It would have to be a really unusual situation.
Yeah, exactly.
To do that.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And really, the reason that using a written membership agreement is good strategy is because it forces that customer to make a psychological commitment to what you're doing. Whether or not, again, we ever enforce the terms or not, I mean, you know, of course we're not going to, you know, go, like, you know, sue every student who decides that they're going to stop doing martial arts. But what it does do is it forces them to be thinking about us like a committed activity, rather than thinking about us like soccer or football or baseball. And just that subtle change in psychology makes a huge difference. Now, I don't want to spend any time on this topic in general. What I really wanted to just mention to everybody is I think any and all strategy or advice, you have to apply it to your specific situation. You know, for some schools, depending on what your objectives are as a school owner, one strategy might be appropriate. If your objective as an owner is different, then a different strategy might be appropriate. So, for example, if I'm looking at operating a martial arts school and I want to be the chief cook and bottle washer, I want to be on the floor every day delivering all the classes, I want to be doing all the sales myself, that's what I want to do, then I would recommend you follow this path over here. Right? This is sort of an operational model that we know works well under those conditions. Now, if that's not your objective, you know, that I would say someone like a Keith Hafner, you know, who just wants to go in every day and do all the enrollments and work with all the students directly, the model, that type of a model might work very well for that purpose. Now, if your objectives are different, if your objectives are that you want to operate the location at a distance, perhaps you want to manage staff and have the staff operate the location. Maybe you want to scale out to multiple locations. Maybe you want to, you know, operate the business as, you know, as an absentee owner where you then go and create other businesses. Well, I would suggest very different strategies then, very different business operational models, right? So I think just in general, I want everybody to be very cautious about who and how you allow your thinking to be impacted, especially in today's, you know, who, you know, anybody can just go put a video up on the internet, right? So be very careful. I think any type of just blanket statement or blanket, you know, belief or, you know, system really is very dangerous. I think you really want to look at the specific objectives that you have with your school, the specific, you know, type of operation you want to run, what you want. I believe the business exists to serve you, not necessarily the other way around. I believe that the business exists to provide you with the lifestyle that you want, and then we craft the business model to equal that, not the other way around, right? So if I think that's just in general, and Sharla, you may have something to weigh in on that, but in just general terms, I think you have to be very, very careful about, you know, someone decides to put up a video on YouTube that says, hey, nobody should be using contracts. And then you go and just, you know, stop using membership agreements. I mean, it just, first of all, it's ridiculous advice. But secondly, it doesn't take into account at all what your objectives are in your business. So just be very cautious. I guess that's probably my best advice is everything should be specifically built for your school.
Well, you know, without getting too in the weeds on that on that particular example, but I just dealt with that last week. Billing company giving the advice that you cannot write an enforceable contract in an area that has to be cancelable in 30 days notice. And by the way, this was for Australia. Although, you know, in the United States, every state is different. In Canada, every province is different. And, you know, and internationally, Australia is the same way. As I was looking specifically at Queensland, but each province is a little bit different. But what had happened in this case, and I've had this argument with at least three different billing companies over the years, is they were taking health club regulations and taking the worst possible scenario under health club regulations and telling a martial arts school owner that he had to comply with those regulations and then praising the sales process to comply with regulations that didn't even apply to it. And so when you and I had this conversation yesterday, the day before, and in the column of worst possible advice, and I have different questions as well as that, but you and I have gone through the list of stupid stuff that's going on right now around some of the quasi-consultants. I say quasi because some of our people have no idea what they're talking about. Others are, you know, have figured out a pitch that works to sell their stuff. And usually the pitch is what the recipient wants to hear, not necessarily what's good advice, right? But let's go through that list. I mean, you know, one of it is that, you know, everyone you enroll should be month to month. Is the I think the reality of that is that we've done a back to the 60s loop, and a lot of martial arts schools are looking to the fitness industry for their models, and therefore have made some real mistakes in how to think about things. And other people just have our horrible at the education process for a new student or for an existing student. And since they're horrible at the education process, they make a decision not to do anything that feels difficult. like get somebody to make a commitment of some sort.
Well, yeah. My explanation for that, by the way, Mr. Oliver, is typically with new folks, especially in peak performers, when we're kind of just getting to know each other. The way I define it is this is probably a much longer conversation than we have time for, but let me just give you the quick little point outline for everybody just for their own edification. In my definition, there are about five different business models in the martial arts industry. When you look at the spectrum of how schools operate as it relates to program type, program duration, program structures, there's about five different structures. And all of them, for lack of a better description or for lack of any real definition, trace their roots back to one of probably two sources. One would probably be like the Holiday Health Spas in the 19-teens, and the other would be like the opposite example would be like the Arthur Murray and Fred Astaire dance studios in the 1920s, which, by the way, I've done tons of research on. I've got old ads from Holiday and old ad material and sales letters and things like that from Fred Astaire and Arthur Murray and all these things, and it's really brilliant stuff. But the two very different approaches that they took was that the health club business took the approach that this is a hugely mass market product, and we're going to do like 1,000 enrollments in January. We're going to put 1,000 people into this business in January, and really, you know, not really care if they ever show up again. But we're going to do a mass number of new members in this kind of hot season, and exist on that. And Arthur Murray and Fred Astaire knew that dance was not such a mass market product. Dance was a niche product, and it was a niche type of a program. So they had to figure out how to create successful locations, smaller square footage, higher student value, longer student tenancy. And their model was not to sell a month of lessons for a month of tuition, but instead to quote sell a program. And all of their marketing, which is really fascinating stuff, is about how to be the social butterfly, you know, how not to be the wallflower anymore. If you live in the 1920s and you live in New York, or if you live in a city, you're going to go to parties, and if you don't know how to dance, you are the social outcast. So I'm not going to sell you a month of dance lessons for $60. Instead, I'm going to sell you the Be the Life of the Party program for $650. And in that program, I'm going to teach you the foxtrot, the waltz, the two-step, the tango, the this and the that. By the end of this program, you're going to be the life of the party. So, see, they figured out that selling a block of things, a unit, a program, was much, much more, had much more leverage than just trading a month of tuition for a month of service delivery. So they're very different models. And a lot of the marketing is really fascinating. If anybody would like to see it, I'll send a few of them around. But if you go on to Google documents and look around at like really old Popular Science magazine and Popular Mechanics and Life magazine and stuff like that, you'll find a bunch of this really old, you know, 1920s, 1910s, 1930s stuff. It's just brilliant, you know. But from a strategy standpoint, what you said I think is exactly right. Now again, there are some models that folks that we work with, clients that we work with, that are basically a business. They're a health club that sort of looks and feels like a martial arts school. And then on the other hand, what I would rather see for almost all of our martial arts clients, in especially in the traditional part of the market, is to have them look much more like a private school than like a health club.
Well, and Matt Miller, we have Grandmaster Justin Edge with us too now. I had apparently given him the wrong call-in number. I gave him the Inner Circle number. For the Maximum Impact call.
Okay.
So the first question, and you know, we should always, you know, defer to real-time questions. But we always promise to answer questions from emails and other direct communication as well from members. But it was, you know, the worst advice you've heard recently in the industry. Master Smith, are there a couple things that you've heard going around the industry that seem really moronic to you right now?
No, I haven't heard any bad advice. I haven't listened to that.
You haven't been paying attention to the wackos. You know who they are.
Exactly. He filters out the bad stuff before it gets to him. I like it. I like it a lot.
Well, I had, what has become popular to tell martial arts instructors is that if you're a good enough martial arts instructor with engaging enough classes, you don't need to know anything about marketing. Is who will flock to you because you're so engaging and so compassionate, and that you don't need to know how to market. And I guess take it down to the next iteration of that, which is if you're a good enough instructor, you can get all of your students from referrals. And you know, let me address that in two ways. One is that even if you're structuring a business where the vast majority of your students are from referrals, there's a strategy to get that to happen. It doesn't happen by teach 30 hours of classes and be, you know, the next Tony Robbins of martial arts, and then students flock to you. It happens by pizza parties and birthday parties and buddy nights and ninja nights, UFC day, Woody's Wild Wings. It happens through having a systematized approach. I just talked to a former member who sadly, he had gotten the big picture right of a lot of the things we do, but he hadn't gotten the idea of making appointments, and then he was chasing them, and he also hadn't gotten the appointment of the idea of, you know, once you have leads, going back to them over and over and over again. So it was get a name and a phone number, don't do anything with them at the time, wait a couple days and then try to call them. Of course, nowadays nobody answers their phone. And then he hadn't integrated sequential broadcast voicemail, text messaging, email, direct mail. And what I would say is this, is you can create a model where the vast majority of your students do come from referrals if you have a variety of well-designed marketing systems in place to help facilitate your students bringing their friends in. And that's about having events that they're comfortable bringing their friends in for. But you still got to have a marketing system in place. The other thing is you don't go from being a small school to a big school through referral systems, because still you have critical mass, 150, 200 students. You really don't have enough to draw from. So one example was school owner with 30 students being told by a consultant who's trying to sell him on being a high-level teacher type, that you don't have to do any marketing systems. If you're a good enough teacher, it's all going to happen. And he's sitting there waiting for what he called organic growth. And there really is no such thing, because you get a trickle, but you're not going to get a flood of people through referrals.
Yeah, it's if everybody goes back and reviews that that video I did a while back on the four kind of like the bullseye, it's belief, strategy, tactics, execution, right? And what you're describing kind of goes back to the belief system. You have to really manage your beliefs. If most of us believe, see, when we got into the business, we mostly didn't get into the business because we wanted to be in a business. We got into the business because we love doing martial arts. We love teaching martial arts. And we were sold the bill of goods, probably not deceptively, but it just, you know, came to us that as long as we were really good at what we did, people would, if the greatest fraud perpetrated on the American entrepreneur, if you build a better mousetrap, the world will be a path to your door, right? Every one of us has heard that before. But since the original spring-loaded mousetrap was invented, there have been more than 14,000 patents issued for a better mousetrap. Right? More than 14,000 of them, but none of us own any of them, you know? So you can have the best mousetrap in the world, and if the customers don't know about it, they don't care, they're not going to come in the door. And even better yet, if the customers don't believe they need it, they're not going to buy it. So I think you're exactly right. We've got to have that fundamental skill of getting our message in front of the right market and getting it in front of them in a way that persuades them that this is a good thing for them to do, that this is something that solves their problem or will give them a benefit that they want.
You can go through an endless number of products over the years where there were two or three or four choices, and the worst one ended up winning for whatever reason. Go back to VHS versus Beta. video. Beta was a much better standard, and in fact was used for all broadcast production for years. But VHS won. And then there was Laserdisc, and VHS won out over Laserdisc. And you can go through innumerable different industries where, you know, the highest quality, and in our case, the highest quality instructor, if he doesn't get his message out in the community, is going to sit there and starve. And that's Smith. You and I know many, 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 you know, used to be high-level competitors, are now sage, learned, quality teachers of martial arts who can't rub two times together because, you know, he doesn't know they exist and doesn't value what it is they are or what they're teaching.
And that's the sad thing, is that our best martial artists who are probably great teachers can't make a living doing what they love. And obviously that's one of the reasons why you got involved with NATMA. You know, one of the biggest misconception that I've heard lately or seen was when somebody was saying, they were talking about, and it might have been this 100 school thing that was going around, it was that Master Oliver's only interested in the money. And, you know, when I hear something like that, it makes me think, well, where did they get an idea like that? And then I start thinking, I said, well, when Master Oliver is talking, and we've got a little background noise, I think, from somebody blowing in there. When Master Oliver is talking to schools, he's talking to them about how to increase their growth. And because we know that if we increase the growth, it's going to keep the business running. Your gross is down and you can't pay the rent and you can't stay in business. But what they fail to see, you know, they haven't ever been to one of our black belt testings. They have no idea what our students in black belts have to go through to earn their black belt through the Mile High system. They have no concept of how elaborate our curriculum is and how much we teach the students and how we have a set curriculum where they're testing on new things all the way up to fifth degree black belt. When most of the schools out there, their curriculum is so shallow, they're basically doing the same thing from white belt to black belt, and then when they go for the higher black belt, they're just doing more of the same thing. Whereas our system incorporates a lot of other stuff. And of course, you put a lot of time and energy into seeing that that happens. And in your schools, you put a lot of time and effort into retention. But these are the things that are behind the scenes that when you're helping a school, the problem with most school owners is not their classroom, for most of them. It's their business knowledge. You know, some of the great doctors and maybe great lawyers are great doctors and lawyers, but they go into private practice for themselves and they're out of business. And you go, well, how could that doctor be so great, have his own practice and not make a lot of money? Because some people have a good knowledge of their product, but they don't know how to market it. And that's why you have spent so much time in researching, realizing that the weakest link in 90% of the martial arts schools in this country, the biggest link, weakest link of, you know, when I say the biggest, weakest link, is their failure to do enough marketing to drive enough traffic to their school. And they fall in that pigeonhole of, like Toby was saying, that they think that if they teach good classes, that their students are going to tell everybody and they're going to be able to stay in business. And I will tell you, and we talk about this too, when you get enough students, then there is enough talking about them that you can probably keep your nose just above the waterline, in other words, just about break even with that kind of concept. But when we're talking about making a good profit, when we're talking about delivering a good product by increasing your gross, increasing your gross doesn't happen from just getting new students. the missing part to that is you have to keep them long enough that they spend enough money that you are making a lot of income.
You cannot
fool the people all the time. You can't go in there and just have a good introductory basic program and not have a good black belt program.
To use an analogy, Master Smith, you and I go to a lot of movies. And if you look at how the business of movies goes, is for Iron Man coming up this weekend or for Star Trek, they will spend millions and millions and millions of dollars in advertising. Those two movies, perhaps approaching $100 million in advertising. All of it designed to have a big opening weekend. And what happens is, in that industry, if they have a good product, in other words, they have a movie that people really like, they'll have a big opening weekend, and then weekend number 2, 3, and 4, and DVD sales will all be huge. If they have a crappy product, they'll spend a ton of money, still have a big opening weekend, but then they die. And the reason they die is now word of mouth, or the reason they have a good second or third weekend is people either go and they rave about it now on Facebook and, you know, Twitter and all that stuff, and they tell their friends and they rave about it at work the next day, or they go and say, that was the biggest piece of crap, I can't believe I wasted my time. Like maybe John Tark, they had a huge marketing budget, and as soon as anybody saw it, they said, don't waste your time. And so it died. So we're really the same way, is we've got to get a lot of people out in the community to know about it and get the critical mass, but then in order to perpetuate that word of mouth is about events. It's not just about having happy students giving them guest passes, because that just doesn't work.
It certainly doesn't get the school where, in our experience, the folks that we're working with, it certainly doesn't get them where they want to be. You know, but I think what Master Smith said, it gets you a trickle. You know, it gets you a few here and there. But what most of the folks that we're working with is, we're working with them to get them to a completely new level. Right? It's not small incremental growth. It's about how do we look for the big breakthroughs. How do we move to the next level completely. And, just having a couple of referrals here and there doesn't get you there. You know, this is about a systematic approach to driving enough new traffic in the front door, predictably and reliably. So, I think that's exactly right. And by the way, there is a human performance component of what both of you just described. All of us have a comfort level. We have a comfort zone, right? And almost all, as a part of human conditioning, as a part of human psychology, it's just something that I've always been fascinated with, and I've studied as deeply as I possibly can for a lot of years. And Cialdini talks a lot about it. And certainly Tony in the NLP training sort of, universe talks about this a lot. When people reach a level of income or a level of earning potential or a level of work, whichever, where they feel sort of comfortable, right, where they start to feel like they're as comfortable as what they, quote-unquote, deserve, right, what they think that they deserve in the recesses of their subconscious, they subconsciously start taking their foot off the accelerator, right? And Master Smith, you might be the perfect person to talk to speak to this. You know, when I was doing, like, the Olympic trials and stuff like that, I was a relatively high-level competitor in more traditional martial arts, but I did all the Olympic stuff, too. And I always noticed this. Like when I was doing Olympic trials in Chicago, I made the first two-day cut. So from 5,000 competitors, we went all the way down to the top 30. So I was one of the top 30. And something that I thought was always interesting that occurred to me was I wasn't that much better than the guys who got cut on the first day. You know what I mean? Like, I wasn't doing techniques that they weren't doing. You know, I had the same, not the same, but, I was doing axe kick, round kick, back spin kick. I was doing the same techniques, right? But it was just a little better. It was a slight edge on everything. You know, it was just a little bit quicker, a little bit better angle, a little bit better timing, a little bit better distance, right? So the distance between the guys who got cut in the first days and the guys who, ultimately went on to make the team or the alternate wasn't that bad, right? But I think what happens, and Master Smith, you're the perfect person to speak to this, you've seen so many competitors who have come up through the ranks as you did, and in the competition realm, most of us, most people, most human beings, never achieve that highest level, mostly for subconscious reasons, mostly for reasons of belief, not because of their physical ability in most cases, mostly not because of their, you know, lack of access to training or anything like that. It's mostly psychological. How would you say, wouldn't you say that that's true, Mr. Smith, in your experience, and that also transcends over to business?
Well, what I found in competition is, from when I talked to my fellow competitors, most of them were telling me that they wanted to be, they wanted to be ranked, back when it was point fighting, they wanted to be in the top 10 in their region, or they wanted to be the top 10 in the national ratings. Back when people were working out and setting goals, the one goal, and I was fortunate enough to have Grandmaster June Reed with me and as a mentor, and one of the things that he told me when I was talking about wanting to, because he was asking about my goals, and I was telling him I wanted to be in the top 10 and et cetera, he said, "I don't want you to be in the top 10. I want you to be number one. I want you to be the best. So don't set your goal just to be in the top, but be at the top." And so to do that, I compelled myself to train and work harder, because I felt if I was going to be better than everybody else, unless I trained harder than everybody else, then there was no way possible to get there. Because I know I didn't necessarily have more talent than everybody else. But there was nobody else that was working out, I felt back then, harder than I was. And that's what happens with school owners. Some school owners are smarter than others. And they can accumulate this knowledge that you're sharing and put it to use a lot better than other people. But what I find is that the school owner who sticks with it and doesn't give up and works hard, but also at the same time works smart. Because even if you're training hard, if you're training on the wrong stuff, you're not going to get there. So it's not about just being a little bit better, it's about applying the right knowledge. And that's one of the biggest reasons to be a member of an association like NATMA, is that you can hear this information, but the one ingredient that we cannot get back to the person enough is that no matter what you listen on this call, no matter what we send you in the mail, unless you implement it and you get out there and do the work, you're never going to make it happen. And that's the same thing you were talking about, Toby. You got people
exactly. That
maybe had a good instructor, but they didn't either have enough, motivation to implement all those things they learned. You have other people that are there that have great work ethic, but they have no knowledge. Nope, they didn't have a mentor. They didn't have a teacher. So they don't know how to get into that top 30, because that top 30 has a combination of those two. And the one who put the most effort into that knowledge and increasing that knowledge and then putting the effort into the correct knowledge are the ones who rise to the top.
The thing that I would have to say was the most impactful lesson that I learned from watching you, and you used to tease me about it a little bit, but when it was make a decision to become a school owner, and when it was I was in Denver doing it, is I looked at what you did to be the world champion, and you also did the same thing to be a world champion school owner. But I looked at what you did to be a world champion. I said, well, if you've got to train 4 or 5 hours a day to be a kickboxer, I'm thinking you have to train 4 or 5 hours a day to be a world champion school owner.
And that's where, as you know, I, you know, spent time at the Library of Congress and spent time, you know, taking every course on everything from education to marketing and, you know, reading, you know, I think as Brian Tracy's saying, is you can be a world-class expert if you read 10 books on a subject and, you know, and you're one of the leading experts to read 100 on it. And I always chose to read 100 of every topic. But so many school owners that we deal with drop the ball first is they think that by getting a package in the mail and having access to the website, which is really going to get it by osmosis, but it's just going to, like, you know, inhabit them. I don't know how many people say, well, you know, you guys never talked about how to do this thing. It's like, well, we had on this DVD, this teleconference, and, you know, and this checklist. Well, that's all sitting in my desk. I haven't looked at it. And then the second thing is they're just not willing to do the work. You don't learn a sales system by following a checklist. You learn a sales system by rehearsal. No different than if you were in a movie or a play that you have to do dress rehearsal over and over and over again until it becomes. And then the thing you have to do is go do something with it. So take mass action. But it's important. And, of course, what we find also, and you've seen this a lot, is the chasing the next bright, shiny object. And nowadays, you know, YouTube and all of the different discussion forums are really dangerous because there are people who, you know, some of whom have hidden agendas, most of whom I would say are sincere in giving the advice, but they're not giving good advice. So it's just so easy to go down a path of paying attention to really, really the wrong people and all of a sudden, you know, what you're doing right now isn't working terribly well. And so all of a sudden you go chase a bunch of things that are just, you know, crazy. Because, you know, somebody said it with conviction or was charismatic in their presentation.
And if anybody in the organization, in the NATMA, the members, if they saw what you went through to gain the knowledge to go out there and then put that into place, not just your extra educational stuff you did from Georgetown and all of the time that you spent, you know, reading numerous books, if they would have sat in on any one of our weekly staff meetings that I forced these karate fighters, and we had some of the best in the country back then, I forced them to read a book. I forced them to listen to motivational tapes. I forced them to listen to audio tapes on selling, on closing the sale, on those type of techniques. And then we exchanged those with each other and I made them do reports on those in our staff meetings. It's a lot of what you're doing now with NATMA, sharing that material with them. But if they don't take their staff and implement that material with their staff and actually force them to learn it, I didn't just tell you guys to go do it on your own. At that meeting, everybody had to stand up and talk about what they read this past week. They had to talk about what they listened to on motivation. They had to talk about what they listened to on sales techniques and marketing strategies. Now, back then, our marketing was so advanced because we had so many schools. We did so much, you know, TV, and we did newspaper, and we did all of the, you know, we were everywhere. But we had the money to spend for that. You know, most schools nowadays don't have that kind of money. So the things that you've designed, you've actually taken the marketing to a whole new level that we never even did back then, because now you have shown these school owners, or tried to show these school owners, how to get these people into your school without spending a ton of money. You know, June Reed was spending probably $10,000 to $20,000 a month on marketing.
Yeah. You know? And that's 30 years ago, so... You know,
yeah, triple, adjusted for inflation, yeah, 100 G's, you know.
Yeah.
Well, hey, listen, guys, you know, we do have a rough agenda on the summer things we were talking about today, and
yes.
We do have a member question from Renee Williams that actually dovetails right into that, if that makes sense.
Yeah, go ahead.
Here, just for everybody's frame real quick, and I sent an email around just a little while ago about a ninth pillar. But we've been talking about these eight pillars of the summer success strategies that we've been working really hard on, and you know, we've got all of our guys in the franchise part of the business and our coaching members, our Peak Performer members, our Inner Circle members, all kind of, you know, really engaged in right now. Let me quickly review all the nine pillars for you real quick, if you like, and then we'll talk a little bit about this these community events. Basically, the nine pillars are these. Number one is we're working with all of the other local summer camps to have them bring their students to us as a field trip. And we spent a lot of time on that last week. I think we'll just do a quick synopsis today. The second one is that we're working with a lot of summer community events out in the community. So art festivals, fun runs, marathons, home shows, boat shows, carnivals, you know, in the adult market, motorcycle shows, music festivals, concerts, things like that, right? So both the family and the adult market, there's lots of opportunities for that. But out in the community during the summer months, there are always lots of these types of activities. And that's the one we'll talk a little bit more about today as well. Number three, and we'll talk a little bit about number three as well, is the family and or just general blockbuster movie releases. We're already working on that. As you guys saw the other day, I emailed around a photo of one of one of the franchise schools, the Master Oliver schools, who was already out in the movie theaters last week, getting a head start on all this stuff, getting the staff.
So that was the Sterling location.
Oh, that was Sterling. Oh, okay. I thought that was Westminster. Okay. Oh, cool. Okay. Sterling.
Okay.
And we'll talk about that today because Iron Man is coming up this week, and this weekend really, you know, unbelievably so, this weekend kicks off the summer movies, the summer movie season. So it's crazy.
And by the way, Iron Man's already done $198 million international.
Internationally, yeah. This thing is going to be huge, crazy huge. Yeah, yeah. So number four, that was number three, are those blockbuster movies, either family-related or not. Number four is business-to-business, specifically seasonal summer businesses. Things like the 4th of July fireworks vendor, the Mother's Day and Father's Day, you know, the flower people, the candy shops, you know, those types of the businesses that have a huge influx of customers in a relatively narrow period of time that meet their demographic and psychographic profile. So we'll talk a little bit about that over the next couple of weeks as well. Number five is we're working on our accelerated staff training programs. In the summer, we always take a few days out, sometimes a week, sometimes 6 weeks, where we're staffing up, we're gearing up for expansions and things like that, or we want more bench strength in the individual schools, so we do this accelerated staff development program. We'll talk a little bit about that probably in the next call. Number six is we go back to our website when we're looking at our search engine optimization and our search engine marketing tactics, and we're recalibrating for summer-specific things. So summer keyword density, looking at other communities out in the blogosphere that address summer issues and things like that. Number seven is we're retargeting all of our follow-up systems, our follow-up sequences, email, text message, voice broadcast, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, for leads and things like that that relate to summer, the seasonality of the summer. So instead of the regular email that goes out on day four of our lead slice or the regular telephone call, we now add to that or enhance that with summer messaging. You know, hey, by the way, if you don't mind me asking, what kind of summer camps were you planning on getting Johnny involved in this year? You know, things like that, right? So it's just sort of tweaking that those tactics. Number eight, and this was the last one we had, it was eight pillars, and I've added a new one today. Number eight was just sort of our internal summer camps. If that's something that you do, you know, I personally stopped doing them in high school because I was so busy doing these other external events. But if you're doing internal summer camps in your school, then that's obviously something that we're focusing on. And then number nine, this is a relatively, I don't want to say new, but a lot of schools have been having trouble getting social couponing networks to pick them up. Groupon, for example, has almost almost like a corporate policy not to work with traditional martial arts schools because typically the sales are so low. You know, it's not something that sells particularly well on their platform. However, both Living Social, Groupon, and Amazon Local, all three of them now, are carrying some of our clients, some of our people, former members, Inner Circle members, summer camp ads, summer camp offers. And I forwarded one around to you guys today from one of our people, former clients, that just got on Living Social, which was then picked up by Amazon Local. So if social couponing is something that you're interested in, some people are not interested in. It does attract a certain customer. It is a lower quality customer in some cases. But this is one of the first times that we've had a lot of success, broad scale, getting them to pick up an offer that will drive a lot of traffic into the martial arts school.
Say differently, an offer that was kids market, not women's fitness market. Women's fitness is, you could flood traffic. The trick is converting them. For the kids market, it's a different dynamic.
Yeah, and that's absolutely right. I think I said traditional, but yeah, you're absolutely right. What Groupon and Social Living, you know, again, what they're trying to do is they want to sell a lot of something, high quantity of these offers. And the typical customer, mostly the subscriber, is, I think 24 to 39-year-old woman that lives in the suburbs. So, a lot of those types of offers, so fitness-oriented offers, sell gangbusters on those platforms. The traditional, what we would consider to be a traditional, quote-unquote, like you said, kids' school, family school, hasn't done very well. And we actually experimented with it in the very early days of Groupon. Trying to just even get into the group was a problem, right?
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, the only new information I guess I would have to contribute to this part, this particular number 9 strategy, is that they are carrying a lot of summer camp offers right now. Because, again, that's attractive to that customer, that, 24 to 39-year-old woman. Yeah, the mom, exactly. And my belief is, by the way, we don't have good data on this. Again, this is the first year that this has been a broad-scale opportunity for us. My belief is we will have better conversions on these folks because we have a longer period of impact. We have them in our camps. We have a very robust relationship with them. So my belief is we're going to have a better conversion rate.
Yeah, I would say a little differently because we've seen a lot of schools that, bring in even 100 kids over the summer and then don't convert them. And there's a definite strategy that we've used very successfully to convert them. And so it's probably not appropriate now. But what we will do is spend time on that in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. So those are the 9 pillars. So external summer camps, other summer community outreach activities, events, family or blockbuster movie releases, B2B, specifically seasonal, summer seasonal businesses. 5 is the accelerated staff training system. 6 is sort of relooking at website SEO and SEM strategies. 7 is retargeting all the follow-up systems. 8 were these internal summer camps, that you're doing for your own students and then also, guests. And then 9 was leveraging some of these social couponing opportunities.
Let me interject some before I forget it, because when it came to Ironman debuting this weekend, is everybody on the call should go get the Men's Fitness article and the variety of articles that have been about Robert Downey Jr.
Mm-hmm.
And, I don't know if he's the highest paid, but he's certainly one of the highest paid, most prolific male actors right now. And Iron Man and Avengers and the various, high-profile roles he's been in have been fantastic. But it wasn't too long ago that he was a heroin addict, was in rehab, famously wandered into the wrong house and, went to sleep in their bed and then, was arrested and was basically, as an actor, was uninsurable. And his story is he attributes most, if not the vast majority, of his turnaround to his martial arts training. And so it's very useful when somebody like that, whether it's a massive turnaround story like in his case, or it's somebody who's a high-profile martial artist like, say, Taylor Lautner. When these movies are out, it's very good credibility both inside a movie theater when you're promoting, but also to your own students and to your prospective students and to the community, to share that story and get that information out to people. And it certainly ties to everything that we're trying to do. And in this case, not just the adult market.
Yeah, and by the way, there are some other resources that everybody might want to know of. In fact, if you look at, well, maybe I'll direct you here, but one of the lead follow-up systems that we have for the Mile High Karate location is there are several YouTube videos, online articles, things like that, where Downey Jr. is interviewed with his Kung Fu instructor on Oprah, on The Tonight Show. I think there's like six or seven of them that I have built into the Mile High Karate follow-up system that, you know, drip on our prospects and drive them over to our blog to watch those types of videos. And again, if you go to YouTube and, you know, search for Robert Downey Jr. Kung Fu, you'll find him. And three or four of them, he does a really good job of describing exactly what you said about how, you know, this martial art helped him find his center and helped him, you know, really kind of get peace with himself. He was trying to fill this void with drugs and realize that it was himself he wasn't happy with, and his martial arts training sort of taught him how to fill that gap, you know, and it's a really compelling story, and I totally agree with what you're saying. So in addition to that, I think, you know, it's a really good resource for everybody right now, especially since he's hot and it's hot. Just go, you know, go search YouTube and stuff, and you can embed those videos on your own blog. If you were one of the people that I showed you guys how to build your own, you know, your website on the WordPress architecture, it takes three clicks, you know, to embed that video on your blog, and then you can drive your leads to it, you know, ad libitum. And I'd rather drive them to it on your platform rather than on YouTube. I mean, you know, drive them to it on your platform so you can control it. But it's great. It's a great resource.
But by the way, don't be small-minded. Just because it's a Wing Chun instructor doesn't mean you generalize rather than specific. So you don't have to be a Wing Chun instructor to have great value in the story that's being told and how martial arts changed his life. That's the first thing we see is, well, that doesn't apply to me because I don't teach Wing Chun, or that doesn't apply to me because I don't teach Kung Fu, I teach MMA. Well, no, it directly applies. So don't self-sabotage with that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, that's right. The question that Renee had was about, okay, so if we go back to kind of review those nine pillars, number one is, you know, we're out in the community working with all the other summer camps, elementary schools, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and getting them basically to bring their students to us as a field trip. We get the permission slip mechanism, all that sort of stuff. Right now where everybody is I've sent everybody around the spreadsheet of how to go data mine your area for those camp activities. Everybody should be at the stage right now where they've already built their list, they've already started calling all of these locations, and they're asking them those five or six questions that we have in the spreadsheet. Mm-hmm. So once they have that spreadsheet built out, then it's time to basically, you know, send them a little mail package, maybe a UPS envelope or a priority mail envelope or something that looks different than just a regular envelope, you know, something that has a high likelihood of getting open and getting to the top of the stack. Shove some lumpy stuff in it, right, so it's unusual. And then you're going to show up on their doorstep a couple days later, right? And the one thing I think that we didn't get to last time was in that negotiation process, you know, obviously they are a summer camp facilitator. They have needs, and you're there to kind of help facilitate their needs. You're there to help them provide an activity that's positive and safe and structured, and it's free for them. In our model, it's free for them. Plus, it helps give them, you know, frankly, it helps give their staff 45 minutes or an hour to just relax. You know, we're gonna facilitate everything. We're gonna do it all for them. You know, so it's definitely a back and forth process in a negotiation. But I would say two things that I'm always very focused on in those types of activities. Number one was, you know, when I go in and meet these folks, I'm always looking around to see how I can make connections with them. You know, so I'm looking at their bookshelf, and I'm looking at the stuff they have hanging on their walls, and I'm looking at their desk, and especially their bookshelf, I'm looking for things that I know about, like books that I've read or people that I've studied and things like that, so that it gives the point of conversation, but it also gives me something in my mind that, I'm going to go to Amazon that night and order, like, the volume 2 of that or whatever it is and have it shipped over to them, right? You know, have it sent out to them with a little note. Now, the second thing I'd say is this. When you're talking about this type of program with a facilitator, I always want to be the first person. I'm sorry?
Let me step it back even broader than that for a second, if you don't mind. Here's where I see the vast majority of conversations get mucked up, is you walk into, doesn't matter what it is, elementary school, daycare, church, youth activity, and start talking about yourself, and start talking about what you do. And some people even walk in and tell them, you know, what's in it for me, right, is, you know, Zig Ziglar's old thing was everybody listens to WIIFM, what's in it for me, meaning if you're talking to a daycare facilitator, what is it they're interested in? They're interested in their staff getting a break. They're interested in the kids having a fun activity. They're interested in a way to have a backdrop to other activities they've already scheduled if something falls through or the person doesn't show up or it rains when it's supposed to be pool day. And they're also interested in that it's not going to cost them any money. And they're also interested that it's going to solve, not create, behavioral problems. And as soon as you say martial arts, they think they're going to be punching and kicking each other in the playground. So you have to address that. And the biggest thing I see, Master Nora, even school owners 10 years later, is they want to go in and start talking about their style of martial arts and how long they, what, you know, what they do and who they are. And they start talking about themselves rather than just asking questions of what the needs are and showing the, you know, in this case the daycare director, what the solution to their challenges are and how we can help facilitate that. The number one rule of networking, by the way, too, is anytime you're trying to network with somebody, if you're of unlimited service to them and looking for ways to help them and looking for ways to do things for them, then, you know, it in most cases, not all, but in most cases, it ends up coming back. But if you're looking at how you get to this famous person or rich person or influential person and how you get them to do stuff for you, people sense that right off the bat.
Yeah, and honestly, that's exactly where I was going, is that what I believe is this. It's a negotiation just like any other, and there's probably too harsh of a term for it. But on the far right-hand side, we have exactly what our bullseye is. And our bullseye, in my humble estimation, a bullseye for me is they load the kids up on buses at the school, they go do some other activity during the daytime, they come to me on their way back to the school. So they come into the school at maybe, I don't know, noon or 1 o'clock or something like that. I'm going to do about a 45-minute session with them. I think for my particular purposes, a bullseye would be once a week for maybe 4 weeks, maybe 3 weeks, maybe 5 weeks, something like that. But a one-time shot doesn't really get me what I want. A two-time shot is better, but probably still not adequate. A three-time shot is probably pretty good. A four-time shot I think I'm happier with, right? So, you know. So I think that's how I feel about it. I'd rather see them once a week for 45 minutes, maybe three times, four times, five times, something like that. And then they take them back in the bus and they go home. Now, notice the orchestration I mentioned there. I want them coming to me as the last activity of the day rather than the first activity of the day. You know, I want me to be the last thing on their mind when they go back to their school, right? Now, that's my bullseye. It doesn't mean I'm always going to get that, but that's the bullseye. That's the highest leverage because that means I can schedule buses every hour coming into the school all day long, you know, on Monday or Tuesday or Wednesday or whatever day that is, right? Now, in a lot of cases, I end up going to them. In a lot of cases, I end up going to the elementary school or I, you know, obviously staff and things, but, you know, we go to them rather than them coming to us. In some cases, we go to a remote location, a third-party location. You know, you just never know. But, you know, so I've got my bullseye in my back pocket. I kind of know what my objectives are. Now, what you said is exactly right. The instant I walk in the door, I'm here to help them. I'm here to serve them. Now, I know that my highest leverage objective is to get them to come to me three or four times, where they deal with all the logistics and I just, you know, handle them when they're in the school. But that might not be their highest priority. You know, maybe they don't have transportation. Maybe they don't do this stuff. You know, it just depends. So what I was just going to say, Mr. Trevor, by the way, is I always want to be the first person who points out the pink elephant in the room. And the pink elephant in the room, I think, are three things, and you mentioned them all. But I think everybody should jot these down. This is part of the script that we teach all of our franchise operators and all of our coaching members. This is part of the delivery of the script. You got to make sure you hit these three items, right? The number one item, you said them quickly, but the number one item is, this is designed to enhance and embellish your program. This is here to help your program, right? It's not, you know, to, like, direct traffic away from you over to us. You know what I mean? It's designed to help you enhance the program. The second pink elephant is this, is you talked about the safety and the kids kicking each other in the playground. They're all thinking that. All of them. Whether they say it or not, that's what they're thinking. They're thinking, oh, my God, karate, geez. That's all I need, right? So I want to be the first person who says basically these words. Now, Mr. Facilitator, keep in mind, number one, we don't teach any offensive techniques whatsoever in this character development program. So we're not going to be teaching them how to kick and punch each other. And we also teach them the four rules of respect with their martial art. And the only places that they're allowed to practice this are while they're here with the instructor, while they're at home with their parents after they've asked permission. You know, those types of criteria. And if, by the way, you ever do see somebody who forgets the rules, you know, and maybe they're practicing their kicks out in the playground or something like that, we have a very effective, positive system to help eliminate and help alleviate that behavior. So just let us know and we'll deal with it. We'll handle it, right? And we handle it in a very positive, you know, motivating way. So that, I think, is the second objection that you have to say first. You have to talk about it first so that they don't have this skepticism in their mind that you're trying to, you know, that it's going to be this disaster. The third thing is, please.
Before you go forward, let's make sure that everybody translates in their mind here for a second. If we're talking about an idea that is going to take cares for to get to a median age of 7, the same conceptual framework works just as well for adults. You've just got to think about the comparable place, and we'll spend a lot of time talking about the adult market. You got to think about what the comparable place is where your target audience of prospective students are hanging out, and then go get to them in mass. And we'll spend more time talking about that when we're not talking about this specific entree.
A quick list could be, you know, the sports bar who does UFC Fight Night, or the local corporation or company that has, you know, 600 or 1,000 adult employees, or, you know, it's exactly the same dynamic. You're exactly right. And that's, Robert, to expand on what you said, too, by the way, you know, we have folks on this call who aren't just only martial arts school operators. They operate dance schools and music schools and private tutoring facilities and things like that. This is exactly the same dynamic. And if you missed what I said here, I think I should reiterate this. The entire program that we're promoting as this field trip is not a summer martial arts program. It's a summer character development program taught by the martial arts school, right? So it's not. We don't want them to have the perception, nor is it reality, that what our primary objective is to come in and teach everybody like Kyokushinkai, right? This is all about this summer character enrichment program that helps their campers become better campers and, frankly, become better students, right? That's what it's all about. And it's done in a fun and positive way through the martial arts, but that's the tool we use to deliver this other thing, right? So the third objection, I think, that you want to be the first person who mentions is the benefit for you as a school owner, right? And here's exactly the script that we teach our people to use. We say basically this. We say, okay, now, Mr. Jones, these are the objections of the program, and here's how it works, and obviously we provide these programs because really they are a win-win-win-win. It's a four-way win. You know, number one, the school and the summer camp wins because, you know, this is an activity that you can provide absolutely free. It adds value to your camp. The students are going to love it, and the parents are really going to thank you for it. It's really a fantastic thing. Second is the students win because, frankly, they become more respectful, more, and have a higher level of self-discipline. And we see that over the first over the weeks of the program, they become better campers for you. You know, third, the parents win because in a lot of cases they just really didn't know what our types of programs are all about, and they really didn't know that that there were even these types of programs out there. So it's definitely a win for them too. Obviously, it's free, so you know, so they have the ability to get advantage of it without cost. And fourth, of course, it's a win for us because you know some small percentage of the students who note this part of the script. Of course, it's a win for us because, and here's the quote mark. You know, some small percentage of the students will choose to continue their training back at our school, perhaps after the summertime. And of course, that helps us, you know, continue to grow our school, to grow the school, and to help provide these programs for other community, you know, other community outreach activities like this. So again, the key part of the phraseology is, of course, some small percentage of the students who participate in the program will choose to continue their training back at our school, and of course, that helps us continue to be able to provide these types of programs for the community in the future as well. Right, so you're kind of taking away what a lot of people fear is, now all of a sudden these people are going to be, you know, mad at them because, they want to do martial arts lessons and, we got involved in the sales process in the middle of their summer camp, right? So I think that part of the scripting and phraseology is pretty useful. So you want to be, I think, the first person who points out those sort of pink elephants, so that they're not sitting there kind of being skeptical of what you're saying because of that, right? So
yeah.
I think that's the stage that everybody should be at right now. Everybody should be at they've cold called a lot of these places. They're prioritizing that list, and now they're just getting ready to go meet some people. So what else might you say about that part of the process, if that's where I am?
Well, I guess I might point out, we have about 20 minutes left, so if anybody has a question you haven't asked in the process of this, chip in. Hit star 6, we have myself, Master Smith, Master Milroy, and about 100 or so or more members on the call right now. So, you know, if you have a question about this or about anything related, you know, chip in and ask.
Hi.
There you go.
Hey, girl. Hi. You mentioned the four rules of respect, and I just wondered that little specific thing because, you know, character development, this all sounds really good. What does that mean, four rules of respect?
Okay, the program that we want them to be doing, right, or at least what we have kind of structured, what we know works really well for conversions, for conversion rates and things like that, and this gets into the delivery of the program. Of the lessons, and we're actually not going to get into that until a future call, but basically there are two core character development lessons that we teach in that program. One is the seven magic words of respect, and one is the four laws of concentration, right? And I'm sure you've heard them before, but the four laws of concentration are just, you know, focus our eyes, focus our ears, focus our mind, focus our body, right? And by the way, everybody should check your membership packages because we've done a series of those posters for you as well that we've been delivering in the monthly packages. So, and also we've done the seven magic words as well. And the seven magic words is just really simple. It's just, you know, yes, sir, yes, sir, no, sir, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am, please, thank you, you're welcome. That's it, right? But what we do is we use those character lessons in the class. We send homework assignments home. If they practice those lessons at home, we give them a little worksheet that they tick the boxes on. And as they tick those boxes, when they get that sheet filled up, they do 10 of them or whatever. They can bring that back into the program, and they earn an attitude strike for their belt, right?
Hmm.
So, Carol, I totally respect and appreciate the question. Don't get too caught up on those logistics just yet, right? Because it really doesn't matter much. It's a good question, right? And that's the direct answer. Four laws of concentration, seven magic words, right? But the reality of it is, it's just one of the tools that we use to get them sort of walking and talking the way we want them to walk and talk. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it's just really totally simplistic.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
Another questions before we move on. Hey, Matt Smith. While we're looking, is what's your perspective on how our view of summer enrollment process and time and volume is compared to maybe what it was a few years ago?
Well, ever since last summer, well, actually the summer before last, when that Karate Kid, the new Karate Kid one came out, even my whole perspective changed because
you know, for most schools, they were thinking summer is people on vacation, people are doing a few things, but it wasn't always the highest enrollment period of time. And so ever since two summers ago, we've just taken a different approach on it. And what I've come to find out over the years is there's never a bad month unless you think it's going to be a bad month. Because when you use that excuse as, you know, and you know our Christmas story for December, for mm-hmm. most schools that's the worst month of the year. For us, it's always been the best month of the year. Because we knew that it was a bad month, so what we started doing was more stuff to gear up for it. And that's the same thing we did for the summer. So all you need to do is analyze your past year and use that as your goals for this year. And whether it's the summer, whether it's Christmas, whether there's a period of time of the year last year that was bad, then that means you have to do something differently this year to offset that. And as long as you become proactive and not set back and just think. And the same thing applies for the good months. You know, I've seen schools, you know, last year their greatest month, this year was their worst month because they thought, because it was such a good time last year, that it's going to be a good time this year. So a good month is when you take control of your marketing and you take control and have a goal set, and you're working towards that goal on a on an aggressive, positive direction.
Exactly.
Answer that question?
Yeah. And certainly with all the different marketing activities we've implemented over the summer, we've been hitting, you know, sometimes the 12-month record for enrollments in July, sometimes the 12-month record in August, just packing them in.
Yeah, we did. We did 120 summer before last. That was our record
mm-hmm.
for that 2.5 months.
Yeah. 120 students on 12-month contracts.
Yeah. Full enrollment people, not full trial deals. Again, I think that's probably the Renee's question. I think is a perfect dovetail right here. But you know, Master Smith says this quite a bit. And I don't think it's to be missed. It really goes back to the, you know, I talked about earlier, belief, strategy, tactics, execution. It starts with your belief system. It starts with what you believe the reality is going to be. And most of us human beings, we block out things that we don't think will help us, and we accept things that we do think will help us. And if you're blocking out the wrong things, you know, or if you're accepting the wrong things, that's how you get off on the wrong track. But I think you're absolutely right. Your belief system should be that the summertime will be your busiest lead generation, the busiest amount of traffic into the school that you're probably going to have for the rest of the year. You know, we can really, really, really kick butt in the summertime, man. I mean, it's a huge opportunity. So, you know, everybody manage that belief system, you know, incredibly well.
Yeah. So the caveat I would give to that is it is a different time of year, as is November, December. And so if you do everything the same way you do it in April, as you do in July, you're going to get a lot worse results in July than you do in April. On the other hand, if you do the appropriate summer events and activities and processes, then you can have as good results, if not better results, as what you had in April. But again, it's a different period, a different seasonality, requires a different approach in many cases.
Absolutely.
And that's where people get caught up. They try to do 12 months a year and do the same thing every month for 12 months. And then they're frustrated that December is worse than October and July is worse than April. But what they're doing is a strategy that's appropriate for, you know, for 9 months of the year, not for 12 months of the year.
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, I guess the way I would define it is if you're looking down the scope of a rifle, right, and you're looking for your ideal game, right, if you like to hunt buffalo or whatever, right, well, the buffalo aren't in the same place in November as they are in June, right, so like, you know, that's all, if you walked out your back door in Denver right now, you probably have, you know, in May, you might have a herd of elk who walk through at nighttime. If I walked out my back door yesterday and I had five sandhill cranes standing out there, right, they're different birds. You know what I mean? They're different animals, and they're in different places at different times. So if you're looking down the scope of a rifle, you want to keep that rifle trained on where your herd of prospective customers are. Where's your perfect customer? And in the summertime, the great news is in the family market, we know exactly where they are. You know? They're in all these other camps, and they're in all, and if we're in the adult market, they're out there doing business with these summer-centric businesses. You know, the guy who sells 4th of July fireworks in the parking lot of the grocery store, or the abandoned parking lot of the old Walmart or whatever, he's going to see 1,000 customers over a weekend, you know? And you know, 50% or 60% or maybe even 80% of those customers are exactly the right fit for you, you know? They're families who want to light up some fireworks in the backyard, you know? So, you know, those opportunities are all over the place. We just have to kind of be open to seeing them.
Yeah, absolutely. Excellent.
You know, I think the second bullet point item was what relates to Renee's specific question, was when we look at these community events. So if we take those summer camp activities, and everybody should have their mission. Now their mission is to get a little mail package out to everybody and then show up on their doorstep the day after the mail hits, right? And then just go meet these folks and start kind of working on deals framed around what you can do for them. The second area is in the summer, both movie events and the community events, like fairs and carnivals and festivals and, you know, 4K runs and our 5K runs and, you know, concerts and all these types of big gatherings of human beings. Renee had a bit of an issue. Obviously, we have this five-step process of turning that into a big regeneration activity. And her challenge was she sent a few staff members out to do one. First time they've done it, so they're still kind of in the experimental stage. But had a real hard time getting the traffic to stop. Right? So people are kind of milling about this this activity, this festival or whatever, this gathering of humans, and had difficulty getting people kind of over to the booth to go through the lead generation process. So just a real quick outline of how that works for everybody. What you should do is go to the members' website and type in the search box 250 intro, 250 intro, and the third result you get is our October marketing call that we did a couple of years ago. But review that call, because that will describe the entire step-by-step process of how to execute these types of booths. But basically what this is the booth at an activity with a spin wheel and some other stuff. And what we're doing is we're driving traffic to the booth. They're filling out a slip giving us the information in order to spin the wheel to win a prize. They spin the wheel. The next step is we set an appointment. We say, hey, you won X. By the way, we also have, an X includes a two-week free, you know, whatever, to our school. We have times available on Tuesday and Thursday, which one works better for you, right? So the third step is we set the appointment. The fourth step is bottom line traffic is step one, collect the data is step two, spin the wheel is step three, set the appointment is step four, and then step five is we try to make a little sale. So we might say something like, I forgot to mention, by the way, we're doing a little fundraiser for the Youth Benevolent Fund here at the church. If you'd like to make a $19 donation, we can also add another 4 weeks of lessons plus a free uniform onto the package. Would you like to do that? You know, something like that, right?
Yeah.
So it's a totally big broad brushstroke on that. But if you go and download that conference, you'll get all the little details. But her specific challenge was getting people actually to the booth. What would you say about that?
Well, you know, let me rattle off a list and do it quickly, and you know, and the replays are posted up on the member site. But the first thing is you've got to be hyper aware of the structure of the event, and a lot of times we've ended up in places where, if I were going to choose that day, having seen what it looked like, it's not where I'd want the booth to be. But it brings you into, you know, if you have a choice, try to figure out where the traffic patterns are going to be and be in the right place. But five or six things. One is one of the usefulness of having a lot of staffing, especially volunteer staffing, is so you can place them strategically throughout the venue where they're interrupting people, giving them information and pointing them over at the booth to come enter the prize drawing, right? So if we've been in where the, you know, we were running, let's say a booth and there's
parallel traffic on either ends of an aisle where we're at and nobody on the aisle that we're at. So we put people down at the end of the aisle to basically act as a redirect and almost block the aisle, point them at our direction and tell them to go, go enter the prize drawing. The second thing that I see, pretty much everybody screws up in a trade show environment, whether that's a fair or a carnival, is to be sitting in a chair behind the booth with literature in front of you, as opposed to be out in front of the booth, on the same side as the prospect. Because what happens is especially if you're in a relatively slow environment, the last thing anybody wants to do is walk up to a quote-unquote salesperson. And they're looking around at what's interesting, but they hesitate to walk up to the booth and talk to somebody who's going to try to sell them something. But we've always set it up where there's a spin prize wheel, but there's also a TV, and if it's a little slow, our staffing will be 5 foot behind the TV, watching the TV as if we're prospects, not as if we're the quote-unquote salespeople. And then when they walk up to look at TV or walk up to look at the prize wheel, then we get their information, spin the wheel, do the prize, all of that kind of stuff. The third thing is to be aware of the booth setup so that you're both creating interest and momentum visually as well as in reality. So, I like to have a big flat screen TV with something that's exciting going on it. That's going to get people to kind of stop and watch for a second, because really all I need to do is get their direction pointed our direction and get them to stop for a second in order to talk to them. And in order to talk to them, unless I have a line cue to the price wheel, I'd rather walk up from behind them than to approach them from the front because it keeps their defenses down. So, that's a starting point, but in a big trade show environment, you can have people posted at the front door. You can have a little flyer that points them to your booth and the deal. Toby, you've done a couple of things with me where we've rented a channel. Maybe a hotel environment. We rented a channel on the internal hotel video. Put somebody in the lobby. Put somebody at the front entrance. Put somebody. Put things in the bag that direct them to us. Put people at the opposite end where the traffic is flowing, even with like a bell or something to get people's attention. They let you do that. Directing them over to the booth, flat panel video screens, a little classroom type of environment if you can pull it off in the prize wheel. And the most important element, of course, of generating leads is having the prize wheel thing. I talked to a gentleman earlier today. I mentioned it before. But he had, the good thing he had done is he had gotten out and gotten a lot of these events set up from the time he spent working with you and I on coaching. But then he had extended himself from it, and he was going out and getting 50 leads, but no appointments, no intros, no enrollments, and was missing a few just simple steps. But, without having somebody on tap to ask him, to ask the question, he probably frittered away 50 or 100 enrollments just in the last 90 days by just doing it wrong. And it goes back to what you were saying, is there's, you can never replace having somebody on tap to just ask the question in real time and find out where the missing component is.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what I did. And that was, my reply back to Renee, by the way, was almost exactly that. You're always looking for a way to bobbleneck the traffic, for lack of a better description. And I always would rather err on the side of aggressiveness rather than passiveness, right? And I'm sorry?
If you don't have somebody who's semi-in charge of the event telling you to tone it down, you're not doing enough.
Well, that's right. Yeah, that's right. And exactly. I'd rather, of course I want to be invited back. Of course I want to, create good relationships with all these people, no question about it. But I can't.
Not if I go waste my time the entire time.
Exactly. I can't come back. It doesn't make sense for me to be there if it doesn't work. If I'm not getting the results I need. So you're absolutely right. So I'd rather err on the side of aggressiveness. And in most cases, the easiest way we've done it, and in that call that you can download, that 250 intro call, Sasha does a pretty good description. Three or four or five two karate kids standing shoulder to shoulder with a small gap between them, with little goodie bags or stickers or balloons or something that you can hand this person who's walking down the aisle or walking in your direction is all you need. And it just works really well. I mean, you know, if a little kid hands the other little kid a little goodie bag and he says, here, you know, this is for you or whatever, or puts the little sticker, the Kung Fu Panda sticker on their shirt or whatever it is, it's enough to get them to stop, right? And then once you get them to stop, the adult in charge, you know, says, oh, by the way, guys, don't forget to go spin the wheel and see what you want. And while he's saying that, he's holding his left arm palm up toward the wheel and his right arm palm perpendicular to the ground, sort of like touching the shoulder, the left shoulder of the person, you know, making like an L, right? And taking two steps toward the wheel with them, you know? By the way, don't forget to spin the wheel and see what you want. And they just walk them right over to the wheel, you know? So, I mean, that's kind of
yeah.
the... You know, the Disney approach, you know?
You never say, would you like to?
Yeah, yeah. Now, don't forget to spin the wheel and see what you want. Come this way, you know, come with me, you know? It's so clean. It's so easy, you know? And of course, people are going to be slightly skeptical and slightly standoffish, and they don't really know what's going on. Of course, that's human behavior, right? Human nature. But, you know, you just chat with them a little bit, and who doesn't like cute kids in karate uniforms standing there being polite and respectful and nice and,
yeah.
you know,
And Matt Miller, we are out of time.
We are.
Rushing off to a conference back here. So, what I would suggest is May 17th, 19th, Inner Circle, 17th, 18th, Peak Performers, the 18th, 19th. Anybody who is Peak Performers, Inner Circle, I'm hoping you're going to be there with all of your key staff members. It's very important to have those key staff members there. For everybody else, you should be in Peak Performers or Inner Circle, and you should be there, but we do have that Members Day on May 17th that you could be there. And if there are questions, Peak Performers Inner Circle, I'm happy to schedule a time in the next couple of days to walk through more detail. And for everybody else, always get us the questions ahead of time, and we'll answer them on the call.
Absolutely. Good. So everybody's got a lot of work to go do for the summer deal. So go get Adam, and we're going to probably have another bonus call here in a couple of weeks as a follow up. So.
Mm-hmm. Exactly right.
Beautiful. Okay, everybody. Thanks so much for your time. Thank you, sir.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
Thanks, everybody. Thank you, Matt, sir.